welcome to the Paper Club Podcast. I am one of your hosts, Rafael Herrera, and with me, as always, is my co-host, Marcia Olivaida, lead data scientist at Deeper Insights AI Consultancy. How you doing, Marcia?
I'm good, thank you. Hi, everyone.
Every month, we invite a Deeper Insights expert on the show to highlight and discuss an academic paper from the data science literature. And this month, our guest is actually a first for us, a returning guest. This is Sonia Marks. She is our generative AI ambassador. She's a data scientist and one of our computer vision experts. Sonia, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Raf. It's a pleasure to be here.
All right, very cool. So you're the very first to ever come on here twice. No longer are you a bonus guest. You are the number one guest. So congratulations on that. And this month, you're going to be talking to us about a very interesting paper. I got a glance at this one. And tell us, what is this paper and what is it that we can get out of this one?
Yeah, so the paper is called Segment Anything, a pretty short title for this one. So this paper was the work of Meta AI Research, previously known as Facebook AI Research Fair. The team worked on a very interesting task, which is segmentation, and they went way beyond what the state of the art is right now. So they divided the contributions of this paper into three topics. So the first one was the task that they proposed, which is a promptable segmentation task, which is very different from what we are used to see. So with this one, we can not only train a model to segment a type of object, but we can actually just, with UI, the user interface that Meta developed, just select the dots. So the dots in, it's a spatial prompt, can be a dot, a bounding box, or a rough mask to let the model know what we wanted to segment in more detail. And as the title said, it can also segment anything. So it can just give it an image and it will segment every object and background that it can find. Then another deliverable of this paper is the model itself, which they called SAM, so Segment Anything Model.
An excellent name.
Yeah.
Who doesn't love SAM, right?
It has two encoders, one for the image, which is a very heavy encoder, which uses a visual transformer architecture, and also the prompt encoder, so which the input will be that dot, the bounding box, or the mask that you give the model to work with, and then the mask decoder, which takes the outputs of these both image and prompt encoders and outputs the final mask, the segmentation results. And finally,
wow.
Yeah, it's a lot. Finally, there's the data engine. It's not so much of a deliverable. The actual deliverable is the data set that they built using the data engine, which is a step-by-step approach to building this huge 1 billion image data set, which is crazy. Yeah, actually it's like 11 million images and 1 billion masks, because there's it's an interesting topic of ambiguity in segmentation. So there's multiple masks for each image. And yeah, they also open source that data set for us to use, which is so large.
Okay. We all know it is Facebook, essentially the company, right? It's just a different name, but it's the same company. So they have all of these different images and they have essentially categorized them. Just another way of saying segmenting, right? Would that be accurate?
Yeah.
Labeling, adding tags and eating things like that.
We can describe it as a pixel-wise task. So they agglomerate, I don't know if that's the best word for it, the pixels in the image into blobs.
Wow.
And divide the image into all of the objects. And you can see it's actually kind of a pity that this is an audio-only podcast, because we could go through the amazing demos that they made available. There's very detailed images and the model does an amazing work at segmenting even the smallest details that it can find.
An interesting thing, right, Sonia, is that it's zero shot.
Yeah.
It's in a zero shot transfer knowledge, right? So basically you don't need to provide a carefully annotated specialized data set to be able to segment, to get these masks from I'm not sure if it's masks, by the way.
Yeah.
To get these.
Yeah, they have masks.
The masks from the from a new image. Okay, so it has this zero shot capability. And that's very important if you want to create a foundation model.
Actually, I think that's a very interesting point. The fact that they coined it as a foundation model. We are used to speaking about foundational models. So I think a good way to sum it up is a big model. So a lot of parameters. It's trained with a large data set, which this one definitely checks. And also, it's a very general model. So the term foundation model is used because it can be applied to basically be fine-tuned to then a more specific downstream task. And in this case, I think the discussion that is raised with this paper is the fact that segmentation is already a pretty specific downstream task. The way that they use zero shot is, yeah, the fact that they don't fine tune the model in any way, but the way that it does is not really generalized so much because it's only used for segmentation tasks. And also the fact that they sell it as being able to solve other types of tasks is because they compose more complicated systems. So, for example, one of the tasks that they use to test this model is edge detection. And actually what they do is not directly do the edge detection, but actually do this segment anything task. And then with that output, just run what is called a Sobol filter, which is a very classic, very straightforward and traditional method to then with that mask that is outputted by the model, get the edges of the objects. You can say that the model is doing the same thing. It's just being integrated in a more complex system.
But this paves the way to a foundational model for computer vision.
I'm not trying to diminish the work that they deliver.
Oh, not at all.
Yeah, not at all. It's amazing. And I think especially this, because one of the ways that they tried to make this model run in a more interactive way was to make the image encoder part of the model very heavy, very powerful. And we can use it, and it's based in a vision transformer architecture. And we have to remember that we can cherry pick the parts that we use. So we can just use this encoder for whatever task that we want. And then the decoder part can be trained for anything that we want. So it's still very valuable for other types of downstream tasks that can be used directly. One thing that we need to take into consideration is the fact that it's so heavy, this encoder is so powerful, that it's not working real time yet. I think they use the term amortized real time. Because what's actually, when we are using the user interface that they made available, what is working in real time is the prompt encoder and the mask decoder. The image one just runs once, and the embedding that it outputs, it's always there, it's always the same. So I think if we wanted to use this for video and actual real time work, it would be a bit tricky. I don't know. I'm not sure. I didn't read the full appendix because it's really long. I'm not sure if they mentioned it. I think not. They just mentioned the inference time for the prompt encoder and the mask decoder. So there's that thing to take into consideration, but still it's very valuable for the community to have access to such a powerful image encoder and being able to extract those features in such a powerful architecture.
So is it normal for a model like this to have that much attached to it upon release? Because it sounds like of all the models that we've been talking about in the recent weeks and that have been presented, this one is very ready to be trained, more so than others. Am I getting that wrong?
To be trained, so
already pre-annotated, it's already looked at and all that.
Yeah, the fact the model is already very powerful because it already went to very complete training. Is that what you mean?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's the fact that they sell it as zero shot transfer is exactly that. The training that they did, it's made the model so generalizable that we can then use it to segment any kind of image that we want, in theory. Maybe if we wanted to use MRI images, which have a very specific distribution, can be tricky. We had to test it, I haven't yet. But they even use like microscope imaging and more domain-specific type of images to test it, and it did very well. They did a really good job at assuring that. They tested in multiple data sets and compared it to models that were actually trained in these data sets. So they made sure they got the bad hand in comparison, and still they delivered big, very good accuracy.
So do you think this is a step to democratizing segmentation, which is known to be requires a highly specialized team of experts and powerful AI training infrastructure and carefully annotated data, as you know from experience in your work?
The comparison that they do is this big data set in comparison to previous state-of-the-art data sets. One of them is the Microsoft COCO data set, so Common Object in Context, I think. And it has, I think, 300,000 images in that data set. And this one is 11 million different images.
Wow.
So we can say that it's democratized, kind of, because we still need a lot of power to use it. And this data set, we can argue that most companies can't really do a lot with it because it would be so expensive to train with such a large data set. But it's closer to that. And the fact that they made available 3 checkpoints of the model, so with increasing levels of complexity. So there's for the image encoder, we have the visual transform in different sizes. So there's the baseline, the large, and the huge. So we can use the one with less parameters if that's what we want and get closer to real-time inference. And yeah, we can get a lot out of it.
And regarding the data sets, you mentioned fMRI, for instance. So do you have any idea how diverse or balanced is these data sets, the ones that they use to train the segment anything model?
I think for what they tested with, I think the most out of the normal photograph kind of images, because they're Facebook and they definitely use
have a lot of photographs.
Images that we uploaded to Facebook and even Instagram.
So there's a chance that they've segmented my vacation.
I think they use only privacy preserving and licensed images from a provider ethically
sourced.
Yeah.
Okay, good. So it's not my vacation that they like.
Maybe your vacation, but at least your face is blurred.
Okay, well, I can live with that at least.
Yeah, they made sure they stated that even in the abstract of the paper, that the images were licensed and privacy was taken into account. So that's a good thing. In terms of the data sets that they tested with, there's one that uses microscope imaging. And there's also one that is called Trash Cam, which is very interesting. And it actually, I think, uses also images from so under the sea. So very dark, very out of kind of normal distribution of the world that we live in and that we usually access. That's different, but more specific domains like fMRIs and medical imaging, they didn't use a lot. They didn't use it. So that would be a very interesting follow-up of this model, trying to get what we can get out of this model for more specific domains. Actually, they did what they call this in the appendix, a probing of the latent space of the model. And they concluded that the representation that the image encoder gets, it's very useful and that can be applied to a variety of purposes. It's what they state. They don't say a lot about the details, but at least we can try to work with it. I mean, images are images. It's 2D data. And it's so diverse, the data set, that I think with a little bit of fine tuning, we can get it to work with a lot of tasks, a lot of images.
How do you think like the contributions of this paper can help you be more efficient as a data scientist, even if not directly applicable using zero-shot transfer?
Yeah, so the fact that they tried to encourage the community to really use it in regards to integrating it in a fuller, in a bigger system. For example, for instant segmentation, they used in combination with a detection model. So there's something to do. I can look back to previous projects that I worked in and see how can I get value from this model that is so well-trained and so complex. I think one thing that we as data scientists need to get really good at is fine-tuning. Because, yeah, with this, what they call foundational models, if we get it in the sense that is so heavily trained, is that we get a very good basis to work with. And then we usually have really specific problems. And that's what businesses will get most out of this type of tasks, because the simple ones, now everyone has access to solving it. You don't need to be a very big expert in data science, computer vision, because everything is made to be so user-friendly now. But yeah, I think for more intricate tasks, this can be very useful to get a good pre-trained model, a good image encoder, and then with the decoder part is our choice, and we can get what we want out of it.
That I was just commenting on the fine-tuning part. So because to fine-tune, I totally agree with Sonia, but to fine-tune, you need kind of carefully annotated in the main data for the specific problem you're trying to solve that cannot be solved, at least with high accuracy, with zero-shot transfer or few-shot learning. How do you get this data? You still have, like, we know that it's one of the most time-consuming tasks of a data scientist. Do you think this using even the more general segment anything model could help with AI-assisted labeling?
That's actually what they proposed with the data engine, especially in the second step of the data engine, which is a semi-automatic annotation task. So the model is already very good at segmenting these objects, but is not human-like annotation. So what they get is to improve the efficiency of the annotators. What they do in this step is to run the model in the images, and the bigger objects especially will be already very well segmented. They also get the annotators to have an erasing tool, just something to make the edges more well-defined. And then the task of the annotator is more to focus on smaller objects and the more difficult parts. So then...
finer details.
Yeah, and they do it this in iteratively. So they make annotators segment images, they get a bigger data set, they train again the model. And then it's the recent repeat.
It's kind of a semi-supervised learning approach.
Exactly. This makes, even when we are using supervised training and we need a lot of data for a specific domain, we can use this as very good tool to make annotations and just augment our data sets by a lot, way more easily with
less time.
So in summary, two of the main ways we can use this as data scientists, the segment anything model, is to use it either as a base model for fine-tuning to more specific downstream tasks, or as kind of integrated in a data annotation tool that would improve the efficiency of the data annotation task for doing the fine-tuning.
Exactly. Yeah, we can use it in those two parts of the pipeline. So generating the data set, and then actually using it as a baseline for training the model.
So yes. In the end, overall, what it would do is not only is it providing a lot of data, but it is helping you move through the process a lot more quickly as well.
Yeah, the pipeline will be much easier to work with this type of tool.
Okay, so from what I understood from the paper, there are different ways to prompt the model. So it's a promptable model, like the ones from NLP. There are several ways to do it, using like the sparse prompts or the dense prompts. Like the sparse could be foreground or background points. It could be a bounding box. It could be also text. And the dense one would be a mask. But I want to explore a little bit the text one, because that would be very useful just to say, I want to find all the cats in this image. Please get me the cat so I can do some, I don't know, video editing or college or fun stuff, or even more serious applications. Tell me a little bit about that.
I think so the team decided to only run some tests regarding text prompting, just as a proof of concept, so POC. With that, they didn't do so much heavy testing as they did with the other types of prompts. But I think it's actually the most interesting part. It's like groundbreaking. If I could just say, yeah, segment these cats or segment these bombs out of these these images. It would be, yeah, this is a very specific one for a project that I worked with. It opens up so much of how these models can be used by anyone, like someone that doesn't know anything about segmentation, about coding. They can just go on the interface that they use and upload a bunch of images and state just with natural language what they want the model to do. And I think the future of these types of, so the after Chat GPT era AI, is for these models to be integrated in tools like Chat GPT, so we can talk with a large language model and explain what we want out of an image. So that would be a multimodal model that Chat GPT tool would take advantage of several foundation models like Segment Anything and extract what we stated we wanted. This alignment between image and text is really the future, in my opinion, and an opinion of who has more people, because it makes natural language is very powerful and is very democratic. And so because we don't need to know how to code to take advantage of these tools. And I think that's a big step forward. And it's groundbreaking for our area.
I agree, Sonia.
I think what I find the most interesting about all this is that ChatGPT came out maybe, 6 months ago or something, and we already are looking at it as old news.
That's how fast-paced this field is currently.
Yeah, it's insane. I'm glad that you are here, both of you, to kind of guide me and any listeners through all of this, because we have so much AI content that is constantly coming out, so I do appreciate that.
And this model was just released at the beginning of this month. This is like very fresh news as well, like this paper. Well, 15 days is already too much perhaps, but...
Actually, I was checking some reviews of this paper, and there was one guy that stated that the comparisons they were doing with the state-of-the-art models in the experiments part of the paper compared this model to models that were made available like 6 months ago, and they are already being surpassed. It's wow. Incredibly fast-paced build. And yeah, we need to be really on the edge of our seats here and be very proactive in researching all of these things that are coming out and just mind-blowing.
That's why the Paper Club is here, why we release these every month, because so much happens. Sometimes we need to talk about the highlights. And Meta's new model segmentation offering definitely sounds like worth talking about.
Yeah, something that is very positive, I think, that they included, not just in the appendix of the paper, but as an actual topic, was a topic called Responsible AI. And they did a study of how the model worked with so diverse perceived gender, skin tone, and age group. And they found that the model works in a very consistent manner. They only found that it was being consistent in segmenting clothing that was more
masculine.
Yeah, perceived gender. So it's the fact that they're paying very close attention to these types of issues is very positive, in my opinion. And I think it is very good the fact that they didn't just put it in the appendix, and it was actually a very relevant part of the paper.
The more fine-tuned we can get these, probably the better, right? So that'll definitely serve everybody in a little bit more of a democratized way, too. That's very beneficial. I think that's a great place to end it. I think we all learned a lot today, and I didn't even know that Facebook was doing this sort of thing. So this is great. I guess everybody's getting involved these days. And with that, I just want to say thank you, Marcia, for showing up, being my amazing co-host.
My pleasure.
And a special thank you, obviously, to our guest, Sonia. Always great to have you on. This is your second time, so we'll see if we can do a three-peat one day. You're one of our generative AI experts, and that is changing all the time, so I'm sure we'll see you soon. To our listeners, I just want to thank all of you for listening. If you are interested in discussing any kind of data science academic papers, please subscribe to our feed. We will be releasing these every month, and we'd love to have you along for the ride. If you have any questions, feel free to reach out to us also via email at thepaperclub@deeperinsights.com. And until next month, I'm Raphael, we've got Marcia, and we've got Sonia, and we'll catch you all next time. Take care. Bye.
Bye-bye. Bye.